Turn with me to Matthew 9, 9 to 13. Matthew 9, 9 to 13. Page 1509. Matthew 9, 9 to 13. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Seeing that Matthew was a tax collector, saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Thus far, the reading of God's Word. As we read there, now all the tax collectors and sinners were gathered around Jesus. And when the Pharisees saw this, they muttered and asked Jesus' disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" I suppose the question right here at the beginning for us is, to what extent or what is the extent of our mercy towards others, especially those who are not Christian, and who may be very different than us? Are we concerned enough about them to bring them the gospel message of grace and mercy? Or another way of putting this is this. How big a fence do we build around ourselves, and should we include others inside of it? The passage this evening gives us some pretty clear-cut answers, if you will, to that set of questions. The answer given is primarily in the example of the great physician, Jesus Christ himself, whose mercy to the sick, becomes a motivational example for us to follow. And secondly, his command in verse 13, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," removes really any doubt what he desires of us towards others. First of all, let's take a look at his example. The great physician Jesus here. The situation we find ourselves here in this passage is one in which the religious people of Jesus' time have very much isolated themselves from the surrounding people. They, if you will, remain at arm's length from the people whom they consider contaminated, unclean, spiritually sick, and of whom they, if you will, look down upon. In their own words, they call these people sinners. They say, sinners. Those tax collectors are sinners. Sinners such as tax collectors. And the tax collectors, as we know from going to church and being raised as Christians, the tax collectors of Jesus' time were hated by the Jews, were considered traitors to the Jews for helping out the Romans. Moreover, these tax collectors were known for their greed. For their swindling of money from their fellow citizens, from the fellow countrymen. We would almost, maybe, probably, categorize them today in the same category as, you know, pimps and drug dealers and the such. They were looked down upon, in other words. They were, you could say, no good people, you know, the kind of people you hope your children stay away from, that kind of a thing. So when we look at our passage here, our text here, Can we blame the Pharisees, these religious people? Can we blame the Pharisees for asking the question, why does your teacher, Jesus, eat with those sinners and those tax collectors? And in some respect, you know, we can't blame them too much for asking the question, can we? Well, perhaps we can. Perhaps we can. If you think about what the Pharisees are saying here, you quickly realize that they're not so much concerned whether Jesus is getting himself into trouble by hanging around with such people, by associating with the wrong kind of people. No, they are in fact attacking Jesus and his character. They're attacking Jesus's character. After all, a person is always known by his friends that he associates with, the company he keeps. A birds of a feather flock together kind of a thing. Could you imagine the sight there at the table, there at Matthew's place? Here, Jesus is dining, sitting, having a good old time with Matthew and his colleagues, his tax collector colleagues, buddies. And I'm sure this group wasn't into proper decorum and etiquette. Perhaps the wine was flowing. Perhaps the language was getting rough and crude. To even be with them, sitting with them, meant Jesus was, of course, in cohorts with them, at least according to the thinking of the Pharisees. But you will notice that Jesus' reply to their insinuations doesn't in the least bit carry any shame or guilt about it for hanging around with this wrong crowd. No, he intentionally hangs around with them. He wants to hang around with them. If anything, his reply actually exposes the vindictiveness of their question, their insinuations. For in essence, Jesus says to them, where should I be? Shouldn't I be with them? You know, should I not be with those who need me the most? I don't need to come into your company, for you yourselves consider yourselves healthy. It is these tax collectors and sinners who, according to your way of thinking and your way of speaking, are the sick. You know, where should I be? Of course, I should be with them. Or in the words of our own passage, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Just because Jesus, the great physician, is associating with sinners, does not mean that he approves of their sin or that he condones it. The Pharisees know very well that it is the sick who need to be healed. So Jesus' quick response to them is in fact a rebuke against them for neglecting their duty towards those who are needy, most needy. Moreover, the very fact that these Pharisees lifted their noses towards the sinners and the sick instead of helping them out shows to us that the Pharisees themselves are not as healthy as they think they are. Just because they give of their tithes and just because they give of their sacrifices doesn't excuse them from being merciful towards the outcast of society. And Jesus tells them, I want mercy, not sacrifices. I don't need your money. I want mercy, not sacrifices. It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but those who acknowledge that they are sick that need a doctor. I don't know if you ever noticed, but sickness and health is a strange thing. Sickness and health is a strange thing. We often like to hide our sickness, pretend that it's not there. Or to have to admit that we are sick might mean that we have to give up doing a few things that we love doing. There are times maybe if we acknowledge our sickness that we can't be with those whom we love and just love hanging around with it because it would jeopardize their health. And the reason being, we love being around people. We are social creatures. But ironically, when it comes to the sickness of others, I'm not talking about our own, but the sickness of others, there's this tendency for us to stay away as far as possible from them. There's a fear of contamination. This is what the Pharisees did. This was their worldview. This is their approach to life. Stay away. They built a high fence around to keep the sick at a distance, to prevent contamination. But we have to ask ourselves, what if physicians did this? What if doctors did this? What if they're not willing to come into contact with disease? What if they're so afraid of contamination that they just put everyone in quarantine but never came near them? What if the great physician Jesus Christ himself was afraid of contamination and was never willing to enter into this broken, this sin-filled world? I don't need to tell you what would happen. But doctors need to be able to get close to their patients. They will come into contact with the disease. There's just no way of avoiding it. One reason why it is so important that we go beyond the circles of who we feel comfortable with and safe with, and get involved in the lives of the outcasts of society, is that if we want to not just be like Jesus, but if we want to find Jesus, we need to go to the places where Jesus is found, or Jesus is hanging out. There are many people who believe that Jesus came to serve the healthy, serve the church, that he can only be found hanging around, if you will, within the walls of the church. And in some sense, this is true to an extent. That is, if we see the church full of sinners, full of sinners. Yet in another sense, it is not true that he can be found in the church. For we don't find, at least in many passages in the Bible, we don't find Jesus spending all of his time mingling, networking with the religious community of his day. But we find him eating and talking with the outcasts of society. Time and time again, he is with the poor, the prostitutes, the lepers, the tax collectors, the so-called sinners of his time. So we want to find Jesus. We must go where Jesus is. We must heed his call that he makes to Matthew, and to us, to his disciples. In verse 9, follow me. Where there is suffering, where there are the wounded, that is where Jesus is. And that is where we should be as well. Jesus didn't come into this world in his Sunday best, hoping never to stray beyond the sound of church bells, hoping never to get his suit muddied or wrinkled. No, he came expecting to do battle against the forces of evil, to be bloodied, to stand there fighting at the gates of hell. He could easily have chosen to sit comfortably in some pew of some church, listening to the soothing chimes of church bells, but he didn't. Instead, he chose to fight at the gates of hell, to stand within the earshot of the screams that were within those gates. It is in the battlefield, in front of the gates of hell, that one finds the most needy. Doctors, nurses are most needed where the wounded are, on the battlefield. Doctors need not come to the safe confines of a training camp. So too, in our Christian walk, in our Christian growth, in our Christian maturation, we need to come to some point beyond the safety of the training grounds, the training camps, or the nurturing grounds of Christian education and catechism and church programs and whatnot. We need to follow, to use the words of this passage, Jesus. Follow Jesus to the battlefield where we can apply what we have learned about God's mercy, God's rich mercy to the sick. Of course, we don't need a graduation certificate or profession of faith card saying that we're now finally equipped to do this. No, we can do that already as children, already as children. However, to say that we must never associate with the sinners of this world, lest we become contaminated like them, is contrary to what it means to follow Jesus and where he goes. Following Jesus means eating with the tax collectors. It means getting bloodied. It means risking contamination. How else can we interpret, you know, these words, this kind of language? In many respects, our whole outlook on life depends upon how willing we are to be with the outcasts of this world. Our outlook depends upon how much we fear the world, upon how much we mistrust those who are different than us. If we are afraid and if we mistrust them, then we will not desire to witness to them as well. We will not desire to bring them into our midst. But on the other hand, if we know that because of the power of Jesus Christ, we have nothing to fear, then we will find ourselves presenting and bringing the gospel of salvation to those who are lying there wounded at the gates of hell, asking for help. Jesus says these words in our passage, "For I have not come to call the righteous, I have come for sinners."